This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. We've all experienced it. Anger, rudeness, incivility. It happens in traffic, in public places, on the job. And it's not always the other guy who's angry or bullying or inconsiderate. Sometimes it's us. So what's up? And what can we do about it? Today on the Afternoon Magazine, what we need to do, what we can do to build and maintain a culture of civility, particularly in the workplace. Our guest this afternoon, Jovenella Gontier, a former ambassador to the United Nations and many nations from the Seychelles Islands. Ambassador Gontier is the founder of Civility Associates in Chicago. She's also the author of the new book, Rude Awakenings, Overcoming the Civility Crisis in the Workplace. Listeners, you can join the discussion with your questions and comments, your concerns about incivility. Here are the telephone numbers. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Ambassador, good afternoon. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good afternoon, Celeste. How are you?
I'm fine. And you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
Looking forward to spending an hour with you and your listeners.
I am looking forward to it also. Let's begin with a definition of civility. What is civility?
Well, for me, civility is being mindful of the dignity of the human being in your space at all times, in all situations. It is not about patent niceness. It is really more about an approach to life, about something that emanates from within. So if you're going to the supermarket today, you ensure that you park your car between your two allotted lines, yellow lines, and then you ensure that you return your cart back to the cart holder area. In other words, instead of just saying, have a nice day to people, you try and make it a nice day for them.
Mm. Do you think we've become less civil with one another in recent years?
I think, yes, the increase in incivility is very genuine. We're now struggling on a daily basis to overcome the results of pushing whole generations, I think, into adult life and the business world without anyone ever taking the time to teach people that there are limitations on our behavior.
I also think that the pace of life has gotten faster, and we're bombarded with messages and information and images, and you know, we're so wired as in plugged in, and wired as in you know, jumpy
anxiety.
Yeah,
that's very true, Celeste. We are wired, but only because we want to be wired. You know, there comes a point when we can say, this is my limit, this is how much I'll take, and now I'm going to have some quiet time. I talk about this in the book, in my book, Rude Awakenings, Overcoming the Civility Crisis in the Workplace. I refer to this particular problem as digital depression. We are plugged in 24/7. I'm sure you've all heard of this expression.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't take time to reflect and to have some inner peace and serenity. But we can if we want to. It's a question of self-discipline. We don't have to have all the latest gadgets. We don't need to survive with all of them. We don't need to be plugged in constantly. I don't know if you know of people who, whenever they get an email, their computer rings a little message or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And then they immediately they become distracted and run away from what they're doing to go and check that email. I mean, how necessary is it for us to really do that?
Yeah.
And I think what we have to do is decide how we want to lead our lives and what kind of quality of life we want. And again, I would say be disciplined. I mean, I check emails once in the morning, once in the afternoon. I need time to talk to reporters such as yourself. I need time to read reports, to research, and to prepare for my workshops. So it's also a question of self-discipline and not just doing what everyone else does for the sake of just doing it. Mm. I also, Celeste, sometimes refer to this as frenetic motion. We are busy being busy, but we are not producing constructively.
Mm. Do you think also that there's an expectation on the part of employers that we be available 24/7?
Yes, there is a great part of that, that we be available 24/7. But again, we can say, look, you know, I work for you 8 hours a day, which is a great part of my waking hours. And I produce and I interact well with my fellow employees. And when I go home, I need to rest and I need to unplug. I talk about this in the book also, where workers of the 19th century were, indeed, they were exploited and were abused in many ways. I mean, that's why labor movements came about and labor unions grew and a lot of our rules in HR developed and so forth. But the one thing that's different from us is when they were home, they were able to rest. Now most of us, when we are home, are expected to be on call, mm-hmm. and that's not healthy either.
Yeah. Well, in the book, Rude Awakenings, you say, you know, we're just plain tired.
Right. We are. We're the National Sleep Foundation says that, what, around 60% or 62% of us don't get enough sleep in the U.S., and when we are just plain tired, that contributes as well to incivility. We snap very easily. We get snippy. And we're not being effective. Our efficiency diminishes on the job as well.
Mm.
So it really contributes to this whole ugly picture of incivility.
Yeah.
But again, it's something, why are we being tired? Why are we so tired? A lot of us are on an economic treadmill. I mean, we want to have two jobs, not because we really need to, but because we want all of these expensive 21st century toys, and we want to keep up with the Joneses. And so we have to examine all of these and try and really reprioritize our lives. Some people, yes, do have a genuine need to have two jobs. They're sending children through college, and they have a slew of other very legitimate expenses, perhaps a sick parent in the home to take care of or something like that. But most of us do it solely for material reasons.
Yeah. I wonder sometime if we've developed a sense that growth and progress are the norm and that prosperity is our due.
Perhaps. But even the growth and the growth is causing is another contributing factor. I mean, I talk about the population, the density population problem. It's not so much growth of population, but it's density that is also contributing to this. We talk about the last census that covered the period 1990 to 2000, and we refer to it as the 2000 census. There was the largest increase in population growth in this country, 32.7 million in 10 years, in a 10-year history, the largest ever in the entire history of the United States. And they're all going to live in metropolitan areas, the largest cities and the surrounding areas of the cities. 8 out of 10 of us live in these areas, and then we're becoming more and more affluent and working harder to get the material toys. Most families now don't have just one family car. They'll have 3 or 4 cars per family. We're all out on the roads at the same time, and the roads are not getting any wider. Public transportation is not increasing. And then you wonder why there is this middle finger dance, as I call it, on the roads, and why are we in such rage? And in Chicago, where I live in particular, the density problem is really, really getting worse. And most of the aldermen love it because it increases their power base as well as their revenue base. But they're not seeing how it's affecting all of us. And remember, as Americans, unlike the Brits, for example, the British or the Japanese, we don't have a cushion of civility to absorb all of this to begin with. We're more cowboyish, you know, entrepreneurial, more aggressive culture. So we don't have a cushion that is absorbent. And I think what we have to start doing is reflecting a little more on where we're going with all of this and what kinds of lives we want. I was, as I was patiently listening to the news before you brought me on, I heard about all of the fires in Colorado, around Denver in particular, which is really, really sad. I mean, it's very disruptive, etc. But a lot of people have moved out into the mountains to seek more serenity, a quieter life. They're trying to find solutions for themselves, and unfortunately, they're experiencing this horrendous disaster. So I feel for them.
You know, I believe most of us want to be civil and want to be treated civilly, but we may be rude inadvertently. We may be unaware we have a problem. What's your advice for examining one's own behavior? Can I give myself a civility tune-up?
Excellent approach, Celeste, because usually we find in civility training that the attribution theory is very, very predominant, very strong. And that means that it's always the other person's fault. It's never my own responsibility. People usually tend to forget to ask, how did I contribute to this uncivil episode or problem? And I think you're right that most of us are inadvertently rude. There's a hard core there that we call in the business. There's a whole new lingo now developing around this because it's really a burgeoning field. It's really an emerging issue all over. And by the way, not only in the United States, because I've done some workshops abroad also. But some people are in character, are uncivil in an in-character manner, but most of us are what we call inadvertently uncivil. And if you want to have a personal tune-up, is take a look at yourself, see how you have contributed to a situation. Sometimes we're too quick to say, he's such a jerk. Oh, I just can't stand her. Due to some misunderstanding or miscommunication that has transpired between two people. And if you take a step back and see what your contributions were to this unpleasant episode, that's a way to begin to say, you know what, I'm also maybe accountable here. If I hadn't done A, B wouldn't have happened. A lot of times that is the case. When you raise this awareness, especially in training, in our workshops and so forth, it's amazing how people go, bingo, you know what, I've had a problem for the last 3 months, and all of a sudden, just by asking myself this question and giving myself an honest answer, I think I've tracked the root cause, and I'm going to go back to the office and fix it. And the other thing is, a lot of us, when you ask about, you know, the rudeness, is most of us are rude simply because we can be. There's no one calling us on it. And when somebody does, sometimes people, you know, will react in a harsh manner. Usually they will take a step back and say, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that. I'll try and do better. But that's a way to begin. And then just absorbing other people and also comparing the differences in your own temperament and disposition of, you know, how did you feel today when you tried to be a little kinder and nicer to people around you compared to when you were in a snappy mood the day before? And you'll find that it does bring you serenity.
Take a deep breath. Take a walk.
Take a walk. Take a deep breath. I, you know, and then when you go home, instead of remaining plugged in and being anxious to see what all of these emails are at work that are coming at you, I mean, the sun is going to come out tomorrow. There's going to be another day. Garden, learn a foreign language, learn how to play a musical instrument. I mean, unplug.
What do you do to
well,
unplug?
Well, actually, I speak five languages, and recently because I now live in the United States, I've found how important Spanish is, and I'm the type who likes to learn what other people are, you know, I like to understand what other people are talking about when they speak in a different language, and like it or not, this has become the second language in the U.S. So I've learned how to speak Spanish, and I would much rather conjugate verbs, believe it or not, because then I can show off with my Hispanic friends the next day about how good I'm becoming, and rather than, you know, watch for my emails all evening or watch trash TV. So thank God for shows like yours, Celeste.
Well, you know, you mentioned language, and I think that's a terrific thing. I wish we were required as in this country to learn another language in school. Now it's an elective,
right?
And I think that with learning another language, it opens your eyes to another way of looking at the world.
Absolutely, I was going to say that if you hadn't said it. Absolutely, culturally, intellectually, and emotionally. There's so much that you can learn, and you also learn about different peoples, why they are the way they are. I mean, why are some cultures very punctual? Why are some not? What is it about their language, the power of those words that really affects their mentality? And I think in so doing, it also helps you become more understanding and more civil towards other people. But my husband loves to garden, and that's how he takes care of his stress. Mm. While I was writing the book, mind you, I wasn't practicing what I'm preaching. I only had 4 months to write the book. So I did work 12 to 15 hours, but I was on deadline. And as with the case of a lot of publishers now, if you don't meet that deadline, they do take back some of your advance money. So there was an incentive there, yeah. But it wasn't for my entire life.
Yeah,
you know, there were parameters set, and this is what I had to do, and I had that to meet that goal, and I did it. Mm. But once in a while, you find that, yes, you have to remain plugged and work very hard, but it shouldn't be a constant part of your life.
And I suppose the other thing to keep in mind is that this is not forever.
Right.
It will end.
It will end, and that's what I kept telling myself when I was doing this book.
And probably kept telling your husband.
Yeah, yes, exactly, because this is my first book, and by the way, if the readers are wondering what the title is, it's called Rude Awakenings, Overcoming the Civility Crisis in the Workplace. And unless they add an extra zero for another advance for my next book, I'm not doing another one.
Oh, well, let's hope it's a hit for you then.
Well, I don't know if you've had a chance to know that USA Today reviewed it.
I saw that.
Did you?
I did.
Yes, it was an excellent review. We're very pleased.
I did.
Yeah, we're very, very happy. So yeah. I think we are on a roll here.
Our guest this afternoon, Javanella Gontier. She's a former ambassador to the United Nations and many nations from the Seychelles Islands. She is the founder of Civility Associates in Chicago, and she's the author of the new book, Rude Awakenings, Overcoming the Civility Crisis in the Workplace. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon. I welcome your questions and comments, your concerns about civility and incivility. Here are the telephone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Our guest's book, Rude Awakenings, is published by Dearborn Trade Publishing. You work with companies on issues of civility, and the book is about the workplace, civility in the workplace. And the subtitle of the book includes the words civility crisis. And the obvious question here is, how bad is it?
Well, it's bad. It has really permeated the workplace. And people are now beginning to realize that something has to be done because it's a business imperative. It's really affecting morale. It's affecting productivity. It's affecting the bottom line, which is profit. And we have now had several studies with some very solid empirical data showing that it also affects retention rates. We're finding that 12% of people leave the workplace on an annual basis due to rudeness. That is very high because of replacement costs and so forth. You know, it can take up to 1 to 2.5 times the cost, the salary of the job to replace a new worker. And, of course, then there are people leaving for other reasons. And when you make, when you connect the dots and make those linkages, then you really see the connection and why it has become a business imperative. The other big cost in business is with the health disorders. There's been some studies done now that directly correlate incivility with health disorders in the big, in the workplace that can cost up to $36 billion a year. And that's a huge cost. And then let's not forget in our litigious society, the lawsuits and the unfavorable publicity. And lately it seems that there's been a spate of it, of ethical quandaries in the workplace and CEOs being arrested, going to jail, and many lawsuits and so forth. When I started this about 4.5 years ago, seriously developing this business, I mean, a lot of corporations out there didn't even want me to teach a module on ethics. And I found that to be very bizarre.
I bet the demand for your services now has shot up incredibly.
Right, it has shot up for a variety of different reasons, but we're finding that there's a very real business imperative. When I was doing the research for the book, I went through a lot of court cases because they are for public knowledge and court proceedings, and found so many cases dealing with emotional distress and a hostile work environment that weren't sexually related. We're not talking about sexual harassment here, but harassment of different sorts, of bullying and of being disrespected, mistreated, and sabotaged in some way. And but these cases don't get as much publicity in our press, I guess, because we don't value civility as much. I have to tell you, and it might be of interest to some of your listeners, Celeste, that the Europeans are way ahead of us on this particular issue. I always like to say we like to tinker with technology and machines, and they're more into social restructuring and engineering. They tinker with people. But the European Union came up with the Dignity at Work Bill in 1990. Well, it's a recommendation. They can't come up with a bill. They can only recommend to the various national parliaments. And Sweden took the lead in this. And the Scandinavians have done numerous research projects. Unfortunately, they're all in languages I don't read or understand. But subsequently, the other European parliaments, for example, in France, in Ireland, in Spain, in Portugal, have taken this up. They are mostly dealing with the issue of bullying, which is one aspect of incivility in the workplace.
We have a number of folks waiting to talk with us now.
Oh.
So why don't we go and take the first caller who's been waiting for us patiently. in Charleston on the toll-free line. Good afternoon.
Hello. Thank you for this timely program. And this is not exactly work-related, but I was wondering what your guests would have to say about industries that have built up that bank on your civility, for example, telemarketers. And how do you protect your space or in a polite way, in a civil way? And I was wondering if she had any suggestions.
Yeah, this is a huge issue right now, and it's being discussed in our legislature in Illinois. So it is very timely. A lot of it also depends. Remember, civility is based on reciprocity, and it takes two to tangle. And when they call you, and you know it's within your right to say, "I'm sorry, I'm not interested." And they should respect that rather than keep pushing. It's when they keep pushing and don't want to hang up when the problems arise. But there is also a law now, a federal law, I believe, that you know you can ask them not to call your number again and ask them who this is, what their specific. They'll never give you their names, but they can give you some sort of number that they have. And ask them not to put you on a list, not to be called again. But I think it takes two, and usually it's, you know, you try and tell them, look, I'm not interested. I'm trying to serve my family dinner. Please don't call here again. And then it's when they persist that I think you have a right to get a little harsh.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate your advice. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Next, we go to a listener calling us on the toll-free line who waits for us on line one in Aurora. Hi.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon. Yes, this is a very good program. I wanted to say two things. I wanted to make a comment that when you first started to speak, all I could think of is, I wonder when. I don't watch much TV, but I would say I watch about an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours a day, maybe. In that time slot, I don't know when I've seen any civil acts on TV. Between the advertisements, which are usually rude, brash, crash, there's nothing civil about them, very seldom, you know. I'm not saying there aren't any. I'm just saying there aren't many.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
And where are children going to learn if they don't learn from that box? I don't, unless you teach them all, and I hope you do. The other thing I wanted to comment on was the fact that you can see civility on TV, and then where do you place dress? This hasn't been mentioned, but I thought it was very inappropriate and very rude when I went to my neighborhood drugstore about a month ago, and the girl was there with her navel showing, 2 inches of her midriff, and her T-shirt or whatever just about met the midriff. And I thought that was very uncalled for. And so where do you put dress as being rude in the workplace?
Well, we do have, ma'am, a chapter on appearance and grooming in the book. And the reason why we included a chapter on appearance and grooming is because issues having to do with appearance and grooming are often the cause of incivility between people. Especially in the workplace. The problem is when we went to casual dress, we didn't really have a very well thought out set of expectations about what casual dress meant. So people came because there were no guidelines and no codes or policy about casual dress, people came dressed in all kinds of ways. And that led to a lot of incivility, a lot of name-calling, and a lot of tension in the workplace. We find that with casual dressing, there's been a ripple effect in the workplace.
In what effect?
a ripple effect.
In what way?
In the sense that when you are very casually dressed, mm-hmm. your demeanor tends to become very casual as well. Your manner, your posture, the way your language deteriorates because you feel you're too comfortable and you don't have to mind your P's and Q's.
Well, you know, when I saw the young girl, I said to her, I didn't even think of what I was saying. I said, why are you dressed like that? All I could think of, this is a workplace. Why are you dressed like that?
Yeah.
If I would have thought twice, I wouldn't have said it. I thought, but she has not been there again dressed like that.
Hmm.
And she's the only one I ever saw dressed like that there.
Yeah, and you see employees at all levels are risking job opportunities and chances for career advancement, I think, because they don't pay attention to the message that their appearance and grooming choices are sending to others. And you probably did her the biggest favor of her life. You called her on it, and she probably went home and thought twice. Because that is one of the issues. We don't call people on it. We meekly just take it, especially when we're yelled at or screamed at or abused in some way. And she probably went home and thought about the kind of message that her appearance was conveying.
I want to thank the listener for her call this afternoon. Somebody else is waiting for us to talk with us. So as we draw down on our time, I want to make sure we get to this next caller. Let's go to the caller now on a car phone near Springfield. Hi.
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 Hello. This is very timely, like the couple callers ago said. I'm a college professor, and I'm noticing more and more incivility in the classroom, and I just had an incident, in fact, this week. So that's my work-related incivility. What I'm wondering is, I guess I'm hoping to accomplish two things by talking to you. First of all, I wanted to say that I did, noticing a rise more and more, I've actually included the golden rule in my syllabus. And I also define civility, and we talk about it the first day.
Okay.
And what it means to be civil, and we talk about that and have a little discussion. But there are always going to be one or two that are going to slip through, they're just not going to get it, just like this incident that I had. And what I'm wondering, the couple things I want to accomplish is, first, if you are able to address my theory of, I wonder if the open door policy in colleges, especially community colleges these days, if that open door policy is causing this rise in incivility, and we have to deal with, it's harder to teach. It seems like colleges are becoming more like high schools. And then also the other thing I want to accomplish is for any maybe college faculty that are listening out there, I really think that this needs to be addressed, that we all need to try to support each other and try to think of ways. And I do try to look inside myself. I do try to say, what did I do to bring the situation on? But I do try to tell my students there are policies, and if I see a pattern, I'm going to call you on it, and I'm going to excuse you from the classroom. So,
that's
if you
fantastic.
Could...
And how do they react to that, may I ask?
Oh, boy. Well, this week, called security, flailing the arms, calling me bad names. So it's pretty scary. I mean, my heart was racing for about 4 hours yesterday, and I thought, gosh darn it, you know, I even had icebreaker, and I did all these things, but I try to keep in mind that this is just—it was really one and one. It was really two students.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were really close friends. But I try to keep in mind that there are another 25 students in that class that do want to be there, or that at least act like they want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to.
If I may interrupt you.
Oh yeah, that's really all I wanted to say.
Well, thank you. One of the things that we haven't had a chance to discuss on the show is another really major contributing factor, and that was in the last 15 to 17 years, what we've done, we meaning HR, training departments, corporations, we've put a huge emphasis on technological skills, on the so-called hard skills, and we've neglected what people call the soft skills, the people interactional behavior skills that I prefer to call the emotional intelligence skills. And with this blunder, because we put all of our eggs in one basket because technology was supposed to save us, what you now have is two generations of people who are coming into the workplace without any training whatsoever in manners, civility, however you want to call it. And remember, a lot of our school systems, in particular the public school systems, in order to afford a computer in every room, had to cut back on certain aspects in the curriculum. And what did they choose to cut back on? They chose to cut back on choir practice, on school bands, on theater, on drama. And those are all activities that foster a sense of community. And this is, I think, part of the crux of the problem now. We find that we get a lot of these people in our classrooms, in our workshops, in our day-to-day work lives, our train stations and so forth, who are very adept with the computer. I like to say they're competent with software, but they're incompetent with humanware. So I think what we have to do is get the pendulum to swing back a little and realize, you know, what we've sown here and what we're reaping now on because of these policies that have been put into place. And we have to somehow, your incident, by the way, ma'am, does not surprise me, but I'm sure some school authorities will say, you don't know how to control the classroom, and you are the problem. Da, da, da. In other words, they have their hands and their heads in the sand, and they don't really want to deal with the real issue. And a lot of them, when I was growing up, I grew up in East Africa, supposedly the backward continent, the dark continent, and all these negative terms that they give to my beautiful continent where I grew up on. We had civility as part of a course. We had to learn how to get along with people. We learned manners. We learned respect for authority, for procedural justice, for our constitution, and so forth and so on. And I think people are now beginning to realize that we've got to pull back a little. I mean, most of the school systems I've talked to, even in the Chicago area, you go to them and say you want to talk about civility, meaning in terms of respect and listening skills and how to institute conflict management, etc., competency tools. They tell you soft, not necessary. We don't need to teach that. So we all have to band together and reorient our thinking process and where we're going with all of these technological toys and love of technology.
Hmm. Let's talk with another listener in Charleston on line 4. Hello.
Hello. I was wondering if you could comment a little bit on perhaps the cultural considerations about civility. One of the things that struck me from a previous caller had to do with her commenting on another person's manner of dress. And I thought, well, you know, if someone said to me, why are you dressed like that, I would consider that being rude. That maybe, you know, we have different ideas about how we dress or how we speak. People from southern Illinois speak a lot slower than people from Chicago and may interpret the speed of speaking in Chicago as being rude. Is rudeness, you know, a manner of interpretation?
Well, I think also where you were going with that was diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people place our problems on the fact that we have become so diverse. And I don't necessarily subscribe to that because we all have a certain norm of behavior. and respect, and thank you in any language kind of conveys the same sentiment. I think the other lady, what she was talking about was this lady was just not another person standing in line. This person was a worker there. Mm-hmm. And coming to work with your navel showing and all kinds of body parts showing and is not really professional. And it's really sending a different type of message to someone other than saying, I'm here to work. I think this was her point. So we have to be a little, we do have cultural differences, but I don't think people are talking about the slow pace of accents or something. What they're talking about is content or, you know, the terribly foul language, the vulgar gestures. And these are things that we all can reach consensus and agree on very quickly. Mm-hmm. So I don't see that calling somebody on something that you find offensive as being rude, especially if it's done in a nice way. Mm-hmm. You have to let people know that, hey, these are my limits, and I am not going to accept this. A lot of people say, well, you know, you're passing judgment. We don't want to pass judgment. But I think in bringing that mantra into our lives, we've also suspended common sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. We only have a couple of minutes left. Before we go, I wanted to ask you this question. You mentioned very early in the book, I believe, that you can tell with a telephone call or just a quick visit to a business if that business values and respects its employees. What do you look for? What are the tip-offs?
Well, Celeste, I have a good nose. I've been doing this for so long, and also remember I'm a former diplomat,
right.
And in the world of diplomacy, we do have an incredible set of protocols and decorum. But when I call and I ask for assistance, if they start telling me, no, we can't help you, or there's nobody, I don't know of anyone to help you, and, you know, you literally get these blocks put in your way, obstacles put in your way, then you know that they haven't been taught about civility. They haven't been taught that, you know, a potential customer might call and ask for some question. If they can't help you, send them to someone else. Don't tell them that, you know, you just can't help. Mm-hmm. You can't help them. I find that a lot of people now don't have that sense of consideration and that desire to try and to want to help you. And then also just going around, we do what we call a needs analysis prior to going and working on various modules and deciding what that company needs. And we do observe the workplace, just looking to see if people greet one another. And if somebody does in the hallway, if that greeting is reciprocated, oftentimes in my workshops, believe it or not, that is the number one issue, that they're not acknowledged as another human being. People are in such a hurry, you know, that frenetic motion pace. And then they feel slighted. Having doors shut in your face when your arms are full of files. That seems to be another big issue that comes up, and it comes up to the top of the list. People rushing into elevators instead of waiting so that others can get out first before they go in.
Mm-hmm.
Those kinds of issues. And then I find sometimes I feign being lost, and no one will come up and say, may I help you? Are you looking for someone in particular? We're just into our own little worlds and into our own selves that we have lost the sense of community that I've alluded to earlier on.
Yeah. One of the interesting things, we've got to go pretty quickly here, but one of the interesting things I learned in the book was, you know, in terms of, you know, developing a good nose, as you put it, is that look around and what does the place look like? And you point out in the book a couple of behaviors that I thought were interesting, new to me, is sort of acting out in public spaces within the workplace, say the lunchroom or a restroom, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
being passive-aggressive in terms of leaving things messy or making a mess on purpose, as though you're getting back at your employer when really you're just making it tough for everybody else who's got to work there.
Right. Yeah, this seems to be a new phenomenon, especially in the women's bathrooms. As I did my research for the book and just talked to a lot of HR people, HR directors and vice presidents, as well as what's known in the field as organizational development directors, this seemed to be a consensus that there was this problem. The women's bathroom mess was specially directed to a mean-spirited female boss. They felt that this was being directed to, you know, mean-spirited female leaders. But then the thing is, you're punishing everyone else who's using the bathroom.
Yeah, and often, you know, it's the secretaries that have to deal with that kind of thing, and that's just really wrong.
Yeah, and in the case of the lunchrooms and break rooms, a lot of times, you know, when food is stolen and when things are left so messy, it's the maintenance staff that's blamed.
Yeah.
And that is wrong, too.
And they've got to pick up.
They've got to pick up, but I think it's also our upbringing and no one wanting to have rules and everyone being afraid to call people on it, so we're not being trained at home. And then it's the sense of self-entitlement, and we've become very self-centered. So why, you know, I'll just throw my napkin on the floor and leave the smelly box of pizza there for a couple of days because the maintenance lady can pick it up.
Yeah. Well, we've got to leave it there. As I alluded to in my introduction, you know, it's not always the other guy who's angry or inconsiderate or bullying. Sometimes it's us. I want to thank you very much for talking with us this afternoon.
Oh, you're so welcome, Celeste, and I just love your name.
Oh, thank you. You have a lovely name.
Yeah, thanks.
Giovanella Gontier has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. She's the founder of Civility Associates in Chicago. She's the author of Rude Awakenings, Overcoming the Civility Crisis in the Workplace.